quick note before we start this episode. We talk a lot about vaginas in this episode, and we also talk about sex. So if these are things that might upset you or you don't want to listen to, switch it off now. But at the C Word, we actually really think that it's an important conversation to be having, to be normalising sex and to be normalising things that can go wrong with our reproductives.
We think it's important to acknowledge that all people can have vaginas and that what we talk about in the show is relevant to everyone who has a vagina, not just women.
And welcome back to another episode of The C Word. If you haven't listened in before, we are a show that talks about life after a cancer diagnosis. And if you have been listening, you'll know that we go off on a few tangents, but we really do talk about what life is really like when you've had a cancer diagnosis.
We do go off on quite a few tangents, but we did last week, didn't we, Helen?
We did.
I think you did a fairly good job of editing out some of my more wilder tangents.
They weren't too bad. And I feel like the tangents kind of give the show a little bit of colour. We'll keep them in for now.
No doubt someone will let us know if we're being slightly too colourful.
Yes, that is true. That is very true. One of the things that Belinda and I are, I guess we've talked about a bit, and because we were both considered quite young to be diagnosed with cancer, I was 37 when I was diagnosed, and I believe you were in your early 40s. Is that right, Belinda?
A lady doesn't talk about her age.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, I was 43. Fine. I'm not a lady, so I was 43.
That is a fine age.
It was very topical today. I sent Helen a link to a newspaper article that some of our listeners might have read. The tragic story of a young woman who died of advanced breast cancer down south. And one of the lines in the article was that doctors had said that she was, it wasn't that she was too young, it was that she was too healthy.
Yeah.
So I guess that's another people being too young, people being too healthy.
Yeah.
And Helen and I did a little bit of digging into the statistics and research in the last couple of weeks. And discovered that this is actually having an impact on younger people who are being diagnosed. Their outcomes aren't as good because diagnosis is not happening. And one of the reasons is because diagnosis is not happening so early. Mm. Because everyone's going, oh, well, it's not going to be cancer because you're too young.
Yeah.
And as we know, early diagnosis leads to much more positive outcomes.
Absolutely. And I know for our Māori and Pacifica community, that's even more relevant because you're more likely to be diagnosed younger. But we also know that, especially in our Pacifica community, people often present much later than other ethnicities, which doesn't always have the best outcome. So, you know, there is a lot around this that, you know, we could tease out. But today we're going to be talking with our lovely guest who has sat behind the Perspex screen watching us trying to set up for this show. So in 2017, Tash Crosby was 37 and she was treated for ovarian cancer. So during that surgery to remove her ovary, they actually also made an incidental finding of uterine cancer. So she'd had a history of cysts and she had also pushed for an investigation because she knew something wasn't right. And she was actually really lucky that she pushed for that because the cancer was still in quite early stages. And so, as we've just mentioned, when you've got earlier cancer, it is much easier to treat than when it's a bit further down the line. So Tash had a full hysterectomy and chemo. And then she went on to launch a charity called Talk Peach, which I really like the name. It's pretty cool. And the aim of that is to educate the public on the signs and symptoms of all the different gynecological cancers in order to reduce those late-stage diagnoses. So welcome to the show, Tash.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I was really excited, actually, when you invited me on. I just think it's such a a great initiative what you guys are doing, and I wish that there had been a podcast and show when I was going through treatment, because I do think it's personal stories and connecting with other people who have been through a similar journey, even if it's not the same cancer, that does kind of helps you through a lot, I think. Connecting with other people who know what you're going through. And I think, because I had a hysterectomy as well, so I've got menopause in conjunction with chemo. It's a double whammy.
Noticing it for sure. Menopause fun.
I actually think as well, on top of cancer, I don't think there's, much support or info out there for, a woman going through menopause as well. I wish there'd be, some more support, sort of that angle.
No, I would agree with that. I don't think there is. I think it's just one of those woman's things.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about the woman's things.
Skip past that subject. That's how I found it. Anyway, but that's why I started my charity as well, to kind of open up conversation on things that I guess for years we've closed off from talking about. So, I mean, I can imagine that it used to be like that, for breast cancer, and, now we've got rugby teams decked out in pink, and it's normal now to talk about breasts, and it's not so taboo. And my hope would be that we can do the same for vaginas and ovaries and cervixes. And
Helen and I were talking about that when we were planning the show, weren't we, Helen? We were talking about how it is really interesting, the difference in how we talk about breast cancer to how we talk about uterine and ovarian and the other cancers. And I wonder if part of it is to do with, we like breasts, don't we? People like breasts. They're interesting and they're sexy and they're part of, apparently, what define us as being a woman.
Yeah.
Whereas, those parts down there, we don't talk about those. Those are a bit rude,
Absolutely. I think it is that. And, and I think it starts, I remember when I was first diagnosed and there wasn't many people out there talking about, I found it quite a struggle to connect with people for quite a while, and not many people were talking about it. But fast forward to now, 3 years later, and there's a lot of groups and there's a lot of people beginning to have starting to have these conversations. So it's definitely in 3 years I've seen a major change in sort of the volume, I'd say, of it. So it's definitely there's definitely some sort of traction happening, but there's a long way to go, I think, before it's the norm.
That's right. And I wanted to start at the beginning, because I think that one of the things that is really interesting is our cancer stories, that people relate to. But I also think it's really important, because then we can talk about what those symptoms are. Take us back to when it all started happening.
So it started in 2016. Well, actually, I think it was about 2013 I had a surgery to remove a cyst, an endometrial cyst. And so they did the surgery to remove that and realized I had stage 4 endometriosis. And then 2 years after that, I kind of noticed I had a strange period. It was a little bit more painful than usual, and I thought, do you know what, the endometriosis is probably growing back. I'm 36 now. I want to protect my ovaries. I'm going to, push to get this checked out again and hopefully removed again. And so my doctor sent me for a scan, and, there was a cyst, which they said, it'll just be another endometrial cyst. Just wait, and we'll monitor it. If it grows, we remove it. Except the last time I had to wait for five and a half months or something. I thought, I actually don't want to wait that long. So I just went back to my doctor and kind of went, I'm actually worried about it. And he kind of he did a pelvic exam, and then he went, do you know what, actually something does feel a bit off. And he rang up the hospital and said, I want to send Tasha in. And they said no. And this is, oh, I can't say this on air, but this is where he did say the F word to his phone, hang it down. And he said, look, I'm going, and he said, I'm going on a locum, you know, I'm going on a 6 month locum or something. And if you're still feeling off on the weekend, I want you to take yourself to emergency department. So I did. And, you know, they had a little feel around, kept me in overnight, did a blood test, whatever. And then said, no, it'll just be endometriosis, take Panadol, sent me home. And then a week later, I went in again, sent home again. And then I went in a third time because I got a shooting pain, like, down my leg. And Mum went, nah, get in there again. I went in there, and my mum actually said, just put the water box on. Like, and I did. I just had a big cry, and I went, I know there's something more, like, wrong with me. Like, this, I knew there was something different going on in my body. Mm-hmm. And this young, I don't know, she was a student, but she was really young, and she was the one that organised extra scans. I got some extra scans, went back to, sent home, went to work a week or so later, and then I got a phone call, and they said, oh, we'd like you to come in. And I said, yeah, like later this week. And she said, no, we want you to come in now.
Oh, God.
And yeah. I just went straight away. Oh, no, I have to say the F word again, but I'm not going to say it. But I said, have I got cancer? Yeah. And she went, yes, we think that you've got cancer. And
wow.
Then, yeah.
Oh, no, she did that on the phone.
Yeah, that was on the phone. Yeah. So,
oh, that's dreadful.
Yeah, what was dreadful? I don't really remember much of getting to the hospital, but my mum took me.
Yeah.
That was a bit of a blur. And then I got put, this was actually the craziest bit, we got sent to this room, and it had like a double bed, it had another single bed, and then it had a TV and some drawers, and you know, it was like a family bedroom. And I was like, oh my god, I'm here to die. Like, it's so progressed. Like, this is obviously the hospice room, you know. Yeah. Like, that's what it felt like. So I'm like, right. And doctor said, like, it wasn't like, even like a hospital room, like, it was,
yeah,
it was so weird. And then I had to sit there for like 40 minutes, and then I rang and got my phone. I was pacing back and forth. By this stage, I'd Googled ovarian cancer, and that's like probably one of the last cancers you want to Google.
Yeah.
This is probably a good place to chuck a factum, actually. The statistics for survival of ovarian cancer haven't changed since the 1970s. Like,
wow. They're
still the same. So it's a 30, you've got a 39% chance of surviving 10 years, and I think breast cancer now is at 92%.
Yeah.
If found by a mammogram, or 81%, I think, if found by a lump.
Yeah.
So it's pretty shocking. So, Googled that, waited 40 minutes, had a meltdown, recalled to them and was like, are you coming? Like, I've been here for 40 minutes. And then the doctor, she came in and, yeah, kind of knelt down next to me, then changed and sat on the bed, and then stood up again. Like, she couldn't get comfy, and I was like, oh, God, just give it to me. Like, what is it? And that's kind of when she said, yeah, like, you're going to have to go in for surgery, and we definitely, you know, we think it is ovarian. We can't tell till we biopsy it or whatever. But from that day, I got my dates and everything to have surgery, and then I had, yeah, the first surgery to remove the ovary and the tumour, and then they biopsy it, and the surgeons came in the next day, and he said, oh, no, actually, it is, it's just endometriosis. And I was like, oh, my family were like, yay, but I knew, like, I just thought, nah, I'm not celebrating this till I've got the facts.
Mm.
And then lo and behold, you know, I had to wait 2 weeks of painstaking, and then, oh no, actually went back in, no, sorry, it is cancer again, sorry. And that's when I got really angry, actually, and my mum and dad, they were with me, just like, you know, had to give me a gentle pat on the leg, but I was like, can you never, ever do that to someone again?
Yeah.
Until you have the biopsy, because you can't make someone think they have the cancer, then not have cancer, then think they have, you know, like, I
that
was just like,
so
that,
awful.
It's already a roller coaster, and that was just an extra, like,
do you know, it's so interesting hearing people's experiences, because I'm thinking back to when I had
you know, when I had the biopsy and things. And what really amazed me is that you could tell they kept basically saying, we can't actually confirm anything. We can't actually confirm anything. So I'm astounded that they did that to you. It's horrific.
Yeah.
It is horrific. It just sounds so incredibly unprofessional.
Yeah. I won't say the name. It was a man. Sorry to the male listeners. No, I'm not actually. Yes, I am a feminist. I'm not a man hater. No, but I won't say any names. So then they were like, right, now that we know that it is cancer, you've got to come back in and have another surgery. I mean, it'd already been cut up from, you know, above my vagina or up my stomach.
Wow.
And then I was like, oh, my God, they have to do that again. So I had to kind of wait, I think, of that. This was in November 2016. The second surgery was January 2017. So then I had the second one, and that's when they removed everything. And then we're like, oh, we found another tumour in there. We found a uterine tumour, which they hadn't picked up on. It didn't show on the CT scans or anything. So it ended up being kind of a blessing that I had ovarian cancer. Otherwise, they would have never gone back in, and this uterine cancer would just be festering away inside me. So, yeah. So in a way, I was kind of like, I mean, it's sort of weird to feel like to say that, but it was lucky that that original tumour was cancerous. Probably saved my life. But I was lucky, and they were it was, I mean, 15% of women caught early with ovarian cancer.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm a rare breed. Like, we've got an early ovarian cancer support group on Facebook, and there's not many of us at all. Like, when we find another person who's diagnosed early, it's almost like finding the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You know, it's like a rare occasion to meet someone caught early.
Do you know what strikes me, though, as I'm listening to you, and I think Belinda and I have spoken about this, is that you knew your body, you knew there was something that wasn't right.
Yeah.
And yet you had to push and push and say, no, actually, something's not right here. And I feel like this is a common story for women when not just cancer, but, you know, with endometriosis or, you know, things that might be wrong.
Women's problems.
Vaginal problems or womb problems. And that they're sort of told to go take a Panadol and go away. You know, we're not taken seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that. That endometriosis, I had that since I was at school, and then I only finally got diagnosed in my late 30s. And they, you know, it must have been there for years, kind of gone unnoticed up. But I do agree with that. Yeah, women's issues are sort of brushed aside. I mean, I know a lot of women who are diagnosed with a gynae cancer who will say, oh, even they pushed it aside as thinking it's a woman's issue. It's just a womanly thing, like backache.
Well, we're trained that way, aren't we?
Yes. Yeah. But we need to retrain women that, these are some women's issues. You've got them, but are they normal for you? You know, start writing them down and thinking, you know, when did this start happening? And think, if things are happening for longer than 2 weeks or so, then you do need to get them checked out. I mean, 4 out of 5 gynecological cancers don't have a screening tool, so you've got to know the science. And yeah, that's where I think education's important, because women won't feel confident advocating for their health if they're not really sure what they should be, you know, being able to stand up for. But if anyone says it's women's issues, I would say take my issue seriously, or I will be the woman. I will be the issue that's the woman.
Yeah.
On that subject, though, Tash,
you
know what I think about when you're saying, when you're talking about this? I mean, you're obviously a strong woman with good family support.
Yes.
Articulate.
Oh, thank you.
Relatively well educated. I have no idea what your education is, but just talking to you, you're someone who is obviously has those skills and capabilities to be able to stand your ground and say this is not right. But what really worries me is there are a lot of people who are not like that, and it's not their fault.
No, no.
It's, you know, whether it's lack of support or lack of education or lack of confidence, and we're all taught you trust the doctors, you trust the medical profession. If they say something's fine, you go away and you behave yourself because it's fine. So how many people are in similar situations where they think something's wrong but don't push it like you did?
I've had that conversation so many times with people, and you know, especially even my family, like when we were going through it, thinking, oh my God, like thank God I had them like with me, and you know, there's and strong friendship groups and understanding boss and things like that. But yeah, there's definitely, I think, a lot of women out there who wouldn't be brave enough to push things. So yeah, I am really passionate about that, and we do get women like emailing and asking us questions all the time, and I always say really clearly, ask any kind of questions, and if you're not getting any answers, or if you want further testing, or you just you're feeling like you're not getting sort of listened to, then definitely seek a second opinion, or go to a different doctor, because you deserve to have your questions answered. But yeah, there is definitely a lot of work that needs to be done in terms for women to feel strong enough to advocate for themselves.
I absolutely agree with you. I do worry sometimes that it's more responsibility put on women or put on someone who is sick. You know, we talk a lot about people need to advocate for themselves, people need to stand up for themselves, and I do agree with that, but then on the other side of it, well, hold on a second, people need to listen to them.
I agree that too, but I also think with education, if you educate people and empower them and teach them, then they know the reason behind things. They can go, okay, I am having this feeling. I know maybe I've got a history of this type of cancer in my family. They get this kind of kete of knowledge, and they're kind of armed with it. And then I think having that education definitely allows you to kind of speak to someone in a kind of more kind of strong manner, because you've got that understanding. Yeah. Whereas if you were just like, I've got a sore stomach and a sore back, and I'm bleeding in between periods, but maybe, I don't know. But then it's like, okay, well, I know that could be the symptom of cervical cancer. I know my auntie had cervical cancer. I know I might be in an age group that this is actually a common age to have it. I haven't had my smear test for this, but, you know, if you're giving them that info, then they're definitely, you know, things are going tick, 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 tick in their brain, and I think they're better able to have that conversation about and push for things. Yeah. I agree with other people on the other side definitely need to be open to thinking about the possibilities of these cancers.
Yeah, and I wonder.
In all age groups.
Yeah, and I wonder whether I can see both sides there, and I think that there does need to be a lot of work done within, you know, the medical profession about, you know, taking women's pain and health more seriously. And also, because I kind of relate to you when you talk about you knew that there was something wrong. And I knew there was something wrong with the lump because I didn't feel right.
Yeah.
But then I think about another situation where I had an IUD in and it made me bleed for 8 months. Mm. And no one's ever, my doctor knew, and it took 8 months of this going on for someone to finally go, that's actually really not normal.
You should probably be going through this.
Yeah, you should probably go and get it checked. And it's funny because I feel like I can advocate for myself quite well, but there are some situations where you can feel quite silenced almost by that sort of...
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. even the strong, the bolshy woman amongst us, and I'd say all three of us probably are, you know, it's still hard, isn't it?
I know. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is hard. But, I mean, I think things like this, like what you guys are doing here, you know, these are the things, these kind of things happening are the things that will open these conversations up. And I think it is, you know, I think people are getting louder, and I think the more kind of little groups and little pockets of things happening does create this voice, and obviously better access for people to go, oh, hang on, I could contact these people are talking about this, or, you know, there's more sort of support groups.
Sorry, it's lessening that isolation, isn't it?
This
is my brain lag, but I keep thinking back to what you were saying before, Tash, about the fact that the outcomes for ovarian cancer have not changed.
No, since the 70s.
So I do want to touch on that again, because I know there has been some work, or there is some advocacy going on at the moment in terms of trying to push for something to... Can you talk a little bit about whether there is screening, whether other countries do it? What's your knowledge around that?
Well, so there's no screening tool as such for ovarian cancer, but there are ways in which it can be detected, which is through a transvaginal ultrasound or a blood test called a CA125 blood test. They don't use the CA125 blood test as a screening tool because it's not entirely accurate, but it will detect up to, I think it's 90% of ovarian cancers. So that's kind of what the groups, and if a couple of us groups in New Zealand are kind of, you know, pushing for, or when people ask, we say, you know, to ask your doctors for that. At the moment, there's a few groups across the country that are working together to support a petition, and one of the things we're petitioning for is, you know, clearer access, or clearer pathways to testing for ovarian cancer, and definitely more education and awareness and more money for research, because, in the last 3 years, the government's given $500 million to medical research and $0 went to ovarian. And it kills more people than the road toll and more than melanoma, and one woman dies every 48 hours in New Zealand from ovarian cancer. But I don't know. It's just like no one knows. It's so crazy. It's for us in the community. Like, I mean, I've shed a lot of tears from just sometimes feeling like I'm screaming into the abyss. I mean, that's the whole reason I started this charity, is because when I got diagnosed, it was a very isolating diagnosis, because you're just like, well, we're all dying. And I mean, we can't march the streets and have huge, big marches, because the reason is that actually we're all dying. Like, we die. Like, that's the sad statistic of it. I mean, that's why you don't see heaps of us banding together, is because, like, I'm in our community, the sad thing is, you know, like, every week we're just watching them die. I mean, I think in the first couple of months of my diagnosis, I made really good friends with a group of 10 girls. There's three of us left. It was 3 years ago. So it's pretty, we need a lot more money for research. We need heaps more. We need a nationwide education. We need a massive awareness campaign is definitely the thing. When everyone should know the signs and symptoms.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And because my mum had uterine cancer, it must be at least maybe 13 years ago. And I mean, she got onto it very quickly, and because she was postmenopausal and started having bleeding, and so, you know, she knew that was
a telltale sign.
And the other interesting thing is that she went through puberty early, and that can be a significant factor into.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Mm. And so she had a full hysterectomy, and then had radiation treatment. But I think you are the second person, aside from Mum, that I've met
that's had uterine. As well.
You're right. We don't hear about it. It's very rarely you hear about signs of what to look out for.
Yeah.
And I know you have your, you know, we have our smear tests and things, but I sort of feel like, as you're talking, I sort of think, where is that advocacy? Yeah. Where is the noise and education?
Yeah, and I think, well, a lot of women, I think, are surprised, you know, because they're like, oh, I go to my regular, I get my smear, I'm looking after my gynae health. And then it's kind of like, well, yeah, that, you know, that will check for changes for the cervix, but that is it. Like, you could have late stage ovarian cancer, late stage uterine cancer, and your cervical smear is not, it won't pick up any of that. So, yeah, so you do need to know. On our website, actually, we've got all the signs and symptoms for all of the five gynecological cancers. There's a lot of signs for the five that do cross over, but they are all separate cancers. They do actually, is quite, you know, have individual things going on with them as well. But yeah, a common sign, like what happened to your mum, is bleeding post-menopause or bleeding in between periods. That crosses across a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And painful sex as well, isn't
it?
Yeah,
painful sex is a common one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bloating, abdominal pain, lower back pain, fatigue. I mean, that's what, you know, then a lot of these, that's the thing. A lot of women are like, I've got all of it. Because you just think, oh, well, a period gives me all that.
Yeah.
Another common one actually is trouble eating, so, and feeling full quickly. So, that's kind of a strange one. And also needing to pee urgently or frequently, like if you're constantly going to the toilet, or if you're just suddenly like, doo doo doo, living a life, and then it's just this urgent need to pee. That's a common one.
Wow.
But they're all difficult ones, aren't they? They could be anything. I need to pee all the time. I've got a bladder the size of a pea.
And then there are some physical ones, you know, with like vulval cancer, obviously, lumps, rashes, sores and things like that. But yeah, with uterine and ovarian cervical, it is all that kind of internal kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think you can, if you just notice, hey, actually, do you know what, if I rewound a month ago, I felt different, you know, and just write some things down, check out a website, look through the signs and go, okay, actually, I've got that. We've actually got a section about, like, what to do when you go to your doctor, and I always think, write it down.
I saw that, and I thought it was such a good idea.
Oh, thank you.
Like, I love your website, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I went through and had a good look at it.
Oh, cool.
I mean, I love the way that you have said, like, this is what to talk to your doctor about. Because mostly people just say, go and talk to your doctor. But they don't actually help you have that conversation.
Yeah.
What do I say? The other thing I loved about your website was the inclusivity of the breakfast.
Thank you. Mm. Thank you.
That's important. Really stood out to me.
Yeah. I think it's a huge, everyone should be, I mean, I think every brand and everything has a, a responsibility to be inclusive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for those listeners who haven't seen the website, go have a look. The graphics are really, I thought they were really cool.
What's the website? It's www.talkpeach.org.nz. Yeah, or on Instagram at @talk_peach. It's got a link to the website as well. And then if you wanted to sign the petition as well, we've made, between the groups, Jane, my friend Jane, who runs a charity called Cure Our Ovarian Cancer, which is for serous ovarian cancer, which is like a rare type. She's made a website for all of our groups, which is Talk Peach, the New Zealand Gynecological Cancer Foundation, Cure Our Ovarian Cancer, and the Ovarian Cancer Awareness Group. And it's, what's the website? It's www.ovariancancer.co.nz, I think it is. Yeah, I think it's actually that simple. And there's a petition to sign to try and get more funding and a campaign and a million, I think, you know, we're doing it for everyone, every woman across the world that's ever been diagnosed, and their whānau have had to deal with it as well and gone through the the pain of it. So, you know, we'd appreciate any signature that we could get.
We'll check those details up on our Facebook page.
That would be awesome.
So people can access it. It's been really, really cool having you on the show today and being able to talk and hear more about it. And I think that's a really very stark message that our ovarian cancer rates have not changed since the 70s.
Yeah.
And that so few people are surviving.
Yeah, and our survival rate's actually lower than the States, than the UK and Australia. All those countries put more money into ovarian cancer than New Zealand does. And, their research benefits New Zealand women, but I think our government has a responsibility worldwide to be putting some money into the pot as well. Mm. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tash. I certainly learnt a lot from talking to you and having a look at the website and just thinking about, you know, these are things that we all need to be aware of and conversations that, as women, that we need to have with one another.
Yes.
And break down those taboos around what we talk about and what we don't, you know. We can talk about, has sex become more painful for us recently? We should be talking about that kind of thing.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's common even with women who haven't had cancer, you know, women who have going through menopause, you know. It's actually, you know, yeah. I need to do a menopause.
Oh, my God. When you said that, I thought, we're wrapping up, and then you then mentioning menopause.
I'm so passionate about menopause because I'm so young, and I'm just like, why is no one talking about menopause?
I know, and I felt the same. You see, the thing for me is that I've come out of menopause because I was just put in it for preservation. And so I feel like I know what's to come, which is somewhat frightening.
Yes.
But when I was in it, because, of course, my oncologist was never going to talk to me about the fact that I might end up with a dry, sore vagina for a start. And so I had to, you know, you do your own research.
But I didn't know.
I got mine lasered. This is another episode, I think. I found someone who would laser it so that it would go back to normal. There's only one person in New Zealand. Oh, actually, a group of gynecologists in Christchurch have just bought the machine. So it's called I hate the name of it, but it's called the Mona Lisa Touch.
That's amazing.
Return your vagina back to normal. So
I'm looking that up. But the other good reason,
it's not cheap, but it's definitely worth it.
Yeah. The other one,
Alan, you know how we do challenges? We could all go off and have
our Mona Lisa. I'm going to go again soon because it was like 2 years ago. But like, I literally cried when I found them. I was like, oh my gosh. Thank God I found this laser. Yeah, I was like, even I said to my friend, I was like, I think I want to get a bank card. I want to bring this another one into New Zealand. The queues would be, I was just like, we've changed women's lives with this thing.
Totally. The book that I read was called My Menopausal Vagina.
Oh, yeah. No, I've heard of that book. Yeah.
And that was very good too because it was just, she talked about all the things that no one else talks about. It wasn't just that, you know, you've got a dry, sore vagina. It was, the increase in anxiety and in the hot flushes. But the one thing I have to say, the one thing I miss is that I just had zero Fs to give about anything. It's almost like I felt like because I didn't have the estrogen anymore.
Yeah.
I had this amazing I don't care. And so I think that is a benefit of menopause. It's almost like it just gives you this different sort of I don't know what the right word is, but zero Fs to give.
Yeah. I love it.
You know what? Listening to you ladies, I'm sitting here. Okay, I think I'm the old. Yeah, I'm the oldest in the room. I'm not in the room, but I'm the oldest
Zoom.
Here.
Yeah, in the Zoom
and
room.
I'm feeling really ashamed of the fact that I've just accepted it. Like, I've done what we say that people shouldn't do. And I'm like, it's kind of sucky, but it's not cancer.
No, the Mona Lisa touch.
Okay, so I'm
there's a group in
Christchurch right now.
Yeah, and I actually called. I was like, oh, how much for this machine? I want to buy it. And then the man flew over, actually, and I was supposed to meet him. I just said, yeah. And then COVID hit, so he didn't come. And then, I think.
So what is it
someone
that you
of
do?
More rich people, buy these machines. I'm giving away my business idea now.
I need to know, what does it do? So what?
It's like, it's almost like, I think, like an IPL machine or intense pulse light, so it kind of just feels like a flicking of a rubber band or something. Yeah. But they do it up your vagina, and it takes like you go in, you have a little consultation and chat about stuff, and then they say you probably need to do it three times. I only need to do it once, and it was for me. And then it took I think about 10-15 minutes the whole thing, and. And I think it was about I think they said, you know, don't have sex for like 3 days or something. I can't remember. But literally, then it was just it was like back to normal again. Not normal, but it wasn't the Sahara Desert anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, I like cried tears of joy. It was
we're all.
I was going to fly to Australia for it because I couldn't find it in New Zealand. Then finally, I found. They do it in Hamilton, and now in Hamilton they do it, and then in Christchurch show. So.
We could have a group hikoi down to Hamilton or up to Hamilton.
Hold on a second. So I'm on the website while we're talking.
Mona Lisa and Touch,
It says that there's one in Auckland, Christchurch, Hamilton, Tauranga, and Wellington.
Oh, okay. Well, the Auckland one must be new because it wasn't there when I went.
Ambrosia Medical New Zealand, apparently.
Oh, cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's actually, might be at a skin clinic or something, because you actually don't have to be a gynecologist or anything to deliver this. Mm. Not that I was planning on buying and delivering myself.
You could be a mobile Mona Lisa.
It is a terrible name.
I don't like it. I'm like, Mona Lisa, like...
The feminist in me is revolting.
Oh, no, I don't know where that came from.
Although, do you know, I'm just having this vision. I'm having a vision of a mobile Mona Lisa clinic, and you've got a white van, and it's got Mona Lisa with her little Mona Lisa smile because she knows the secret.
Oh, my God.
And she's holding the little laser wand. And you would be this amazing person going from top to bottom of our country, curing women of their menopausal vaginas.
Exactly. No more bad day. Can you imagine?
Imagine the ads? I'm down for this.
I know, it's amazing. I know. It's great. The Mona Lisa Touch, you've got to get it.
Yeah.
It's not cheap. I think it was $600 or something a session. So they were like, no, I think it was like $2,100 to get all three done, get it done three times, but I only needed it one.
No, not cheap.
But I reckon one is enough. But, I think it is different for every person. If you go into the forums and start researching it and looking at reviews, you'll get some good ones. You'll see ladies like, it changed my life.
Yeah, push for funding.
Start a petition to get this funded.
I think so.
This has got to be the most interesting tangent we've ever gone.
Oh, yeah, you did say we'd go off a tangent.
Yes.
Well, menopause is a good one.
It really is. It is. And I strongly feel that it's another thing that women are expected just to put up with because, you know, it's your time in life.
Yeah.
And do you know the funny thing, Belinda, is that I have had a gynecologist say to me, because I had a pelvic problem for quite a while, that the patient before me was an older woman who obviously had some sort of gynae cancer, and he actually said to me, well, you should feel lucky because you don't have cancer like that lady. And I just... I feel like there is a lot of work to be done to sort of get to this point where
you know, the gynecological stuff, whether it's cancer or, you know, endometriosis, pain and that sort of stuff, to actually be taken seriously as something that needs, you know, to be addressed. Yeah. And I feel like another segue could be coming on, so I'm going to... I'm going to jump into this tangent. But I think, yeah, we're going to share that Mona Lisa link on the page, because even though it is a ridiculous name, it sounds like a service that people need to know about. Yes. And, yeah, again, it's just so cool to have you on and hear about the work you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been real fun. And you guys are doing awesome as well. I just think this is such so great. I think lots of people will just benefit from this. And it's good that you can go in and, like, go through all the old episodes.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, feel free to share it around.
Yeah.
I will.
Any last thoughts or words, Belinda?
Are you sure you want to ask me that? I'll go off. I'm still reading this website.
She's still on the Mona Lisa.
You're on the Mona Lisa.
Just don't ask me.
Okay. I'm going to do the wrap. I'll wrap us up. So thank you for listening if you've got to this part. And do you know, I feel like if there's one episode that people are going to complain about, it won't be for saying shit. It will be for saying vagina repeatedly.
Oh, and sex.
Sex, vagina.
Oh, hold on. Do we need one of those warnings? One of my favourite podcasts, every time we're at the beginning of it, they say, in this podcast, we will talk about the existence of sex.
Oh, yeah. Of dry vaginas.
Yeah, we need a warning.
We do.
It must be don't a good podcast the ovaries, if you need a warning.
because the funniest thing is that when we air on Planet FM, the show before us is an Italian language show. And so if people stick around from after that, and then we head straight into...
Well, it's probably a Latin word, isn't it?
Yeah.
Vagina, I'm not sure where it comes from.
Yeah,
it's good segue.
Nice segue.
But the fact that it is a daytime show, they might actually need to say something.
Maybe. The rebel in me just thinks we need to leave it and see if anyone complains.
Mm.
And then we can talk about the injustice of not being able to say vagina next time.
You know my general philosophy in life, though? If no one's complaining, you're doing it wrong.
Yes, this is true. Very, very true. All right, okay, we went on another tangent. But thank you so much for listening to our show. We are brought to you by CARES Charitable Trust, supporting your new normal. If you would like to catch up with us, please look us up on Facebook. Otherwise, you can go back and listen to any of our audio on planetaudio.org.nz/thecword, and we will see you next time.
I'm not gonna lie, baby.